Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to show number 73, Culture, the True Story. So I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm a social media HR consultant working with the Engage for Success movement, leading on digital and social media. And the movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there's a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. And we spread the word about employee engagement and we shine a light on good practice, widely supported across the UK with the public, private and third sectors. If you want to get involved, if you go to our website, which is www.engageforsuccess.org, there's an orange button in the top right-hand corner that says join in, and you can join our mailing list to get our regular newsletters. If you tweet, then please share your thoughts using our hashtag, which is #E4S with the number 4. And come and join in our LinkedIn groups. If you go to the homepage of our website, on the right-hand side, there's a section that says connect with us with all our social media links, and that includes a link to LinkedIn or a link to a page about all our LinkedIn groups and how you can join those, and also a bit more information about the radio show if you've just found us randomly and want to find out a bit more. And if you want to be a guest on the show, which is really all things employee engagement, we've had some interesting different types of interviews. In fact, we had one with a Morris dancing person a few weeks ago. But generally, we talk to corporate practitioners about case studies. We talk to, as we call them, our gurus, who come from consultancies and or are academics, and we talk to them, and sort of anything in the middle, really. So if you're interested in being interviewed, then please drop me an email at socialmedia@engageforsuccess.org. So today I'm very excited to be interviewing one of my fellow co-hosts on the radio show, which is Jo Moffat, who's the MD of Woodread, and Charlotte Dahl, who's her strategic planning director. So I'll let them introduce themselves, and then we'll kick off from there talking about culture, the true story. So Jo, do you want to start?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Jo. So this is Jo M as opposed to Jo D, which all gets very confusing. So yes, I'm the other Jo that co-hosts the radio show. So for those who've heard it before, no apologies for a little bit of repetition, but I'm the founder and managing director of Woodread. Woodread's a creative communications consultancy, and we work with clients, quite a broad range really, from big blue chip organizations through to public sector and not-for-profit organizations too, to essentially help them use their brands to engage not just with their external audiences, but equally or indeed perhaps even more importantly, their internal audiences. So for us at Woodread, the brand inside is just as important as the brand outside. And we'll be talking about one of our new thought piece, Culture, the True Story, in a moment. But first of all, I'll hand over to my colleague Charlotte.
Hello there. My name is Charlotte Dahl, and I'm the Strategic Planning Director here at Woodread. And I work with our clients to help them define compelling propositions for their brands, and from that help shape their framework for culture. I've worked across many sectors with many different clients, from the Guinness World Records book to Selfridges, Marks and Spencer, Honda, the Volkswagen Group, through to organisations like the NHS.
I'm so tempted to ask you what the most unusual Guinness Book of World Records record was, but I won't.
Later.
So great.
I've set
to have
a couple
you
of my own actually, Joe, but that's for another show.
So great to have you on the show, and brilliant to have Joe on there. Although as we said, it confuses our guests that we have the same name. I think we're going to confuse ourselves today having the same name in the same show. So just bear with us. So let's kick off then first by talking about the thought piece that we're going to be talking about. And the first question really is around why this and why now? And Charlotte, I think you're going to kick things off for us.
Yeah, absolutely, Jo. Thank you. As far as the media is concerned, culture is a topic that's never really far away from the headlines. They seem to delight in name and shame what it sees as a toxic and unhealthy cultures from some of our biggest institutions. If you think about that, from the banks to the BBC, from the NHS to its very own News International. After the Barclays Bank libel rigging scandal, the Saltz report firmly blamed cultural shortcomings as the root of its problems. It said its rapid growth had made it complex to manage, allowing cultural silos to develop with different values and cultures in each one. They cited a lack of common purpose as central to the cultural failure. When we surveyed UK businesses back in 2012, it was revealed that just 29% felt that they have the right sort of values-based culture. It's just a topic that's kind of front of everyone's mind at the moment. And we just weren't sure, actually, whether people really understood that a positive culture in business isn't just a nice-to-have, it's a competitive advantage. It's people in business that give you the edge. You know, you can copy the technology, the process, the product, but what you can't copy is the culture. It's really an organization's very own DNA. It's really as intrinsic a part of the brand as the logo. So in our paper, what we set out to do is to discover who are using their brand and their values to create this common purpose and give them this competitive edge. We find out what we can learn from them, what the barriers are that get in the way of creating positive culture, and what needs to happen to maintain and sustain the right sort of culture. So that's what we're looking into.
Excellent. So how do you define culture?
Well, let me pick up on that one. So it's the other Joe here now. When we talk about culture...
I knew that.
We probably sound quite alike as well. That's also the confusing extra sort of added dimension to this, but never mind. Let's keep going. Yes, when we talk about culture, we're talking about when we talk about a positive or healthy culture, what we mean by that is cultures of engaged employees who are aligned with an organization's values. And what we mean by values, of course, are the organizational watchwords for what drives, what unites, what motivates, and really importantly, what differentiates one business from another. So by culture, we mean cultures of engaged employees. And, of course, Engage for Success itself has a fairly similar definition of engagement when it talks about a workplace where employees are committed to their organization's goals and values, motivated to contribute to organizational success. So values and culture are inextricably linked, and Charlotte touched on Barclays just now, and it was their apparent deviation from its values that led to what people like to call its toxic culture. We think about culture generally in a little bit more of a friendly way. We talk about culture as the way things are done round here. We talk about culture as what it's like at our place. But it's, however you describe it, I think it's true to say that culture impacts on everything that an organization does. But often these values and beliefs aren't clear. They're not embedded within the business. They're certainly maybe not lived from the top. And so people tend to take them for granted, or again, as Charlotte mentioned in the report into Barclays, they create their own silo cultures. And so that kind of taking for grantedness is what frequently makes cultures problematic, because people assume that the culture that they've taken for granted is the same as the one that you've taken for granted and the one that you've taken for granted, and they imagine that everyone views things in the same way, and of course, you know, they don't. So culture is something that has to be actively managed from within an organization. Culture has to be recognized at a senior level as something that is as important a part of their organizational strategy, their brand strategy, as their consumer or customer communications are. So it needs to be managed. And one of the ways that we recommend that's done is by using something called a cultural framework. That's the term we use at Woodread. And by that we mean sets of behavioral guidelines that stem from the values and set out how people in an organization should interact with each other
and with customers. And we purposely talk about frameworks. We talk about frameworks rather than codes. We don't talk about cultural codes. We talk about cultural frameworks because it's all about empowering people to do what feels right within a framework rather than issuing some kind of diktat from above or putting shackles on people that stifle their creativity and their individuality and their entrepreneurship. But without behaviors to drive them, without behaviors within those frameworks, values simply become words on a poster. They become entirely meaningless. So frameworks are a really important part of bringing that culture to life.
And I think a really great example of this, Joe, is Pret a Manger. They are often heralded as the pinnacle of an organization who develops behavioral frameworks as a way of empowering their employees. Everybody on joining are issued with what they call the little book of Pret behaviors, which are applicable to any job in the company, regardless of your level of seniority. For them, it's about seeking out people who have the right cultural fit from the start. So just one example of the framework to empower and free, not a code of conduct to restrict. Pret asks staff to use personal phrases that you're comfortable with and to treat customers as if they're guests in your own home. They want to create what they call the Pret buzz, which is a feeling that every customer should experience within seconds of entering, which is all to do with the people who work there. So what they don't do is kind of demand those awkward, parroting, upselling phrases that you get in some establishments. You know, would you like a croissant with that? Would you like a blueberry muffin with that? You know, they don't parrot, have a nice day. It's a cultural philosophy that runs so much deeper, empowering staff to treat customers like individuals. And it's a culture that really works. The retention rate is great for the industry. People stay an average of 20 months. And there's a sense of family that Pret gives its people with an unspoken contract. Pret does more than it should, and employees work harder than they need to. And again, it's a perfect example of the link between engaged employees and the bottom line, the service profit chain in action. Profits were up some 17% in 2012, and 500 new UK jobs were created in 2013.
Sorry, go on, Joe.
I should say, as one of their best customers, I think.
No, you're not. You can't be a better customer than Charlotte is.
But that's it. You see it in practice. It's not an organisation paying lip service to their values. It's something that it's a palpable feeling you get when you walk into that establishment as a customer. So you can see it from both sides.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, to also throw in some of the stuff that I'm particularly interested in around things like employer branding and so on, I remember going for an interview with them probably 15 years ago. Clearly, I didn't get the job. But I remember that feeling then and also wanting to work with them because of how that was. So, you know, they've consistently, you know, kept that for a long period of time. It's not, you know, the latest fad or something that they've just done since people have been talking employee engagement, is it? It's something that they've always lived by, most definitely.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's the thing with culture. It's not something that happens overnight. It takes persistence and patience.
I was just about to sort of add to that, really, and say that, you know, that they are clearly a really, you know, shining example of an organisation that gets it right. But, you know, there are plenty of others. I mean, I think about Whitbread last year. They issued published their annual report and demonstrated cracking profit figures and their best ever employee engagement scores, and they specifically drew the connection. And again, most recently, I think it was only a couple of months ago, at the end of March, the Nationwide Building Society announced a 113% increase in pre-tax profits. And it said that is directly attributed to its employees. And it actually took the step of taking out space in the national press to publicly celebrate its people and talk about them as its most valuable assets. So, you know, I think the tide is is changing, the momentum is growing, and there are some really good examples out there of organisations who do get it, but of course not everybody does, and you know there are challenges that can get in the way, aren't there?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really great that it's really big companies that are demonstrating it as well, because often we can imagine that when you've got so many moving parts, it's impossible to get such good results. So it's great to see those. So as you say, it doesn't always work. So what are some of the barriers to building the positive culture?
Yeah, Jo, I can talk about that actually. Often creating a culture of engagement, we think, can sometimes feel nebulous and unwieldy. It's got an intangibility to it that still leaves it off of the CEO's agenda. But it's not just fear of the unknown, though. Stephen Dando, your chair of the Barriers to Engagement subgroup at Engage for Success and the operating partner of Bain Capital, talks about how senior executives simply aren't skilled or trained enough to actually deal with engagement and deal with culture. He talks about the fact that being an engaging leader is hard and it requires special skills and attributes. And actually, interestingly, talking about cultures, one of the barriers to cultures in organizations is a wider UK business culture of short-termism and focus on results. As I mentioned, building cultures takes time and patience and persistence. And Amy Armstrong, in her Ashridge paper, Engagement Through COIs, talks about how this focus on results renders invisible the process of engagement. I think the other point to make is that executives who have grown up in one organization from graduate level upwards can often become blind to its culture. It's like anything, you need critical distance and objectivity to gain insight, and it's hard when you're immersed in something day after day, year after year. But there's one organization.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things. Sorry, I was just going to say, I think that is one of the issues, and I'm sure we'll touch on it if we talk about the enablers, as we always do in these shows. But there sometimes is quite a big gap between what the senior managers think the culture of an organisation is, and what they're saying the values are and they're believing are happening, if you like, and what the reality is. And you could talk to people at the different levels within the organisation and get a completely different story, can't you?
I think that's true, and I think one of the things that may contribute that is the physical distance between senior management and people at the coalface. And I think one really good example of an organisation who's bucked that trend is HSBC-owned First Direct. It's a famous example of an organisation who has the lowest staff turnover of all call centres and bucks the industry trend time and time again. And for them, culture is the key. The atmosphere in that call centre is the antithesis of a traditional call centre. Jo and I have been to the Leeds call centre ourselves, and I have to say that the atmosphere, the culture, is one of energy and positivity. It's genuinely a happy place. Their culture is one of openness, and like I said, the teams work alongside each other, and so do senior management. And people encourage, they get involved, they contribute ideas, they have the most fabulous rewards. They have, at the basic level, free drinks, free car parking, an on-site concierge service to run errands, aromatherapy sessions, creche facilities, chill-out zones and showers. People are encouraged to have fun throughout the year, and importantly, the values are manifested in practice.
Yeah, that's a brilliant example. So how can you make that happen? I mean, you've mentioned some of the nice things to have in a workplace, which I think most people listening to you would think, oh, that sounds good. As you say, the aromatherapy and the free drinks and all that sort of thing. But it isn't as simple as just sort of throwing those at your employees, is it? What can you do to make the culture, the sort of culture that we're talking about, that engaged culture with the very much sort of values driven.
Okay, well, you said let's talk about the enablers, and here's the lead into that, because that, you know, the good news is you can shape and you can influence and you can indeed change culture. It takes time, as we've said before. It takes persistence and it takes brand. And we like to look at the four enablers of the Engage for Success and think about actually how can we apply those to change culture? How can we apply those to create that culture of engaged employees? And what we've looked at in our paper is each of those in turn and try and find some examples of where those are really being applied to demonstrate that they, you know, that they work. So if they take the first one, visible, empowering leadership, providing a strong narrative about the organization, where it's come from, where it's growing, where it's going. So what can really help with that first enabler in terms of providing a strong narrative? Well, the clue's in the word narrative, and what can really help with that is storytelling. And we looked at the extent to which organizations, particularly leaders, are turning to storytelling to provide new ways to communicate their purpose. A strong story, a strong narrative is a really powerful tool to provide that context for change and help to inspire and inform employees. Stories can provide that picture in a really compelling and engaging way of where the organization is going to, as well as, of course, a little bit of where it's come from. And it's a really valuable tool for leaders to embrace initially. We find that the true value of storytelling from a leader's perspective comes from them in the first place becoming a storyteller, the leader interacting directly with their people, using the story to tell their own belief in where the organization is going and their own conviction, and using that as a tool to bring about change in the first place. And then, having directly told that story to their people, there's then an opportunity to start to cascade that story, so start to kind of indirectly tell that story through management and cascade that down. And one of the things that we've referred to in our paper is some of the interviews that I've had or you've had, Joe, over the last sort of 12, 18 months on this show. So, for example, we had Beck Richmond on from Melcrum, I think it was probably about a year ago now, and she talked about how Volvo were creating toolkits to train their managers in the art of storytelling. So it wasn't just, the storytelling moved from just something that the leader would tell through to something that management teams of managers would do to train them to tell the story using a common language and get that bigger picture out to the wider audience. So storytelling, mm-hmm. a really important part of building a culture and supporting that first enabler, really.
And also interesting note that there is always a story, it's just not necessarily the one that the leaders want if it's not being shaped and facilitated. And I remember going to a guru meeting, I think you might have been there, Joe, where Alex Lewis from BAE Systems talked about the stories of the organization. You know, you have big reorganizations and, you know, redundancies and things like that, and it, you know, it lives on in people's memories for decades. You know, so that there's always a story being created within an organization, and it's just, you know, as you said, creating and facilitating and sort of enabling the story that is going to take you to the next level rather than whatever is randomly allowing. Being told, because you're not doing that. Yes, yeah.
That's right. How you manage culture, storytelling needs to be managed within an organization. It needs to be led from the top. It needs to be the leader of the organization that is shaping that narrative and then driving it down to the next level, to the line managers, for them to be able to then tell their story in their own way too. Storytelling, I think, is, again, particularly valuable in times of change, helping to engage employees with kind of the why, what, and how. And a good example of that is some work that we've just been doing with one of the NHS trusts. Obviously, the NHS trust needing to respond to massive changes in the NHS, and the trusts are needing to undergo phenomenal cultural shifts in the way that they operate, and a strong strategic narrative provides the context for that change, stopping stories from kind of water cooler, Chinese whisper, hearsay story, stopping those stories from developing and becoming the story.
Mm, yeah, exactly. Okay, so as usual, we're galloping towards the end of the show. So let's move on to the second enabler, being about engaging managers. So who's picking that one up?
Yeah, absolutely. No, of course, Jo. The second enabler, engaging managers who focus their people, giving them scope and treat people as individuals, coaching and stretching them. Because, of course, it's not just senior managers. It's line managers that matter too. As we all know, employees quit their bosses and not their companies. We did some work with Dunnhumby, who are the global data company, who the architects actually of the Tesco Club Card. They recognized this. They had bright spark graduates at the highest level who would come into the organization, very quickly be promoted up to managerial level, but often didn't actually have the right managerial skills in order to fulfill that role. So we designed a program for them to help create a culture of inspirational management around the organization. They were losing lots of people through their inability to manage effectively, and after the program, it resulted in a 50% reduction in employee turnover. So the line managers really matter.
Yeah, I think that then it's probably worth, because we are running really rapidly out of time as always, to romp through the third one, because we've touched on this in previous shows. We've talked about employee voice a lot, and I think we had Moat Housing on a few weeks ago, and if anyone wants to sort of pick up on that a little bit more, they can listen to the archive. But the importance of employee voice being heard and listened to in terms of driving culture, Charlotte, we've sort of talked about this a lot as well, haven't we? And I think that then leads us on to the fourth and final one, which is particularly, the reason I wanted to romp to that is because it is a particularly important one when it comes to an organisation embarking on a process of behavioural change or culture change, which is about having organisational integrity, about leaders, again, it comes back to them being seen to walk the walk rather than just talk the talk, where they have such an important role to play in making sure that the values on the wall are reflected in the day-to-day behaviours. And it's not just big companies. I mean, do you remember Eric Collins from Nampak, Joe, who came on the show and talked about how, in his view, that was one of the biggest problems facing creating a culture of engagement was the problem of leaders not actually walking the walk, but just being happy to talk the talk. And you know, we've picked that up in our own survey as well. We found that 33% of executive teams were felt to pick and choose the values they liked rather than live them, and 14% getting rid of them, you know, not dismissing them entirely. So it's you know, there's a lot of work to be done there, and I think that is a really, really important one when it comes to creating effective cultures. And then I guess
and then
finally,
the age of the social. Sorry, I was just going to say, in this day and age of the social media and so on as well, it's about not imposing values without the employee voice bit of it as well, because there's so many tools and opportunities to work, you know, collaboratively, isn't there?
With them,
sorry,
collaboratively,
I interrupted
absolutely.
And we're dashing to the end.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And social media, really, really important part of the mix in terms of people being able to feel that their voice has been listened to and that they've had a chance to contribute. And so I guess at the end of all of this, and the real romp through, we look at how brand will play out in that, and the role that brand has in terms of recruitment, induction, reward recognition, all of these things that can help to contribute to creating a strong, healthy culture. But there's a lot more that we haven't managed to talk about in the brief time that we've had available, that people can read in the paper as and when they get to it.
Exactly. And where can people get hold of the thought piece?
Oh, there's lots of ways. Connect either with me, Charlotte Dahl, or Joe Moffat on LinkedIn. They can get it from our website, which is woodread.com. They can email Joe directly, joe@woodread.com, or hopefully go to the Engage for Success website and download it from there. It's called Culture, the True Story.
Excellent. That's been really helpful. Great to speak to you both and to sort of explore in more detail. But as Joe said, as usual, not enough time. So thank you for joining us.
And,
good to have you. And just to remind you, if you're interested in coming on the show, then please email me, socialmedia@engagesuccess.org. And we look forward to next week's show, and we will see you then.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.